84 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new podcast conceived in geekiness and dedicated to the proposition that all movies are created equal. I am, of course, talking about Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com.
Wow, that's beautiful, Mike. I got to clap it up for that one.
Thank you. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me, as always, is a man who believes Film Book will rise again.
Mike DiCriccio.
How are you doing today, Mike?
Good. I'm upset that I have to be the Confederate in that analogy, but sure, I guess.
Right. I mean, one of us has to represent the Union, one of us has to represent the Confederacy.
Okay.
And I see myself as the good guy in this situation, so.
I can play the role of the evil person. That's fine.
Can you grow a mustache? Like a tweet, like a little like mustache you can twirl?
A twirly mustache. Right. I could pretend that mine's long enough to do
that. Did the Confederates have twirly mustaches? I feel like some of them must have.
They were dastardly villains. Of course they did.
Right. Everybody in history who's ever been a villain had a dastardly, twisty mustache.
Yes. Enough about that.
Yeah. If you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, essentially we start by discussing mustaches for 2 minutes. No, usually we start with some film news, and then we move on to some discussions where Mark and I each discuss whatever media we're consuming lately. After that, we're going to move on to our featured review. This week, we're reviewing the new film from directors Joe and Anthony Russo, the 13th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and the latest Ken Burns documentary, Captain America: Civil War, or, as it's known in the South, Captain America: The War of Northern Aggression.
Beautiful. Just never going to let it go.
I'm particularly pleased with myself, because I could have gone with a lot of Marvel jokes.
You could have.
I could have, but I went with the Civil War jokes. I zigged where I could have zagged.
Keep us on our toes.
I'm going to pat myself on the back for that one. But I'm sure we'll have more Civil War jokes later. Right now, let's get into some film news. It's time for All right, so for film news, it's been a little while since we recorded a film book cast, probably like 3 weeks or so, right, since the Jungle Book review.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that happened in the past few weeks that I figured I'd put it into like three separate categories. So our first category is casting news, and the big casting news from the past couple of weeks is that we finally have our young Han Solo for the Han Solo spinoff.
We do. It's a big day.
It is a big day. It's a big day for a young man. It's a big day for Alden Ehrenreich, who has just been cast as the new Han Solo for Disney, for Phil Lord and Chris Miller's young Han Solo spinoff. Alden Ehrenreich was in Hail Caesar this past year, and he was a highlight of that movie. He was, like, fantastic. And he was actually of the people that were on the list of Han Solo, like that had been released. He was the guy who I was hoping for.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm pretty excited for this.
Okay, that's good. I haven't seen Hail Caesar, so I don't know anything about him.
Yeah. A lot of people are making a joke referencing his scene in Hail Caesar, but one of the scenes in Hail Caesar. But since you haven't seen it, I feel like I'm not gonna say the joke because you wouldn't get it.
I wouldn't get it. So good job, Mike. but I've heard it's interesting that by the time they make the movie, he'll be the same age that Harrison Ford was when the first Star Wars came out.
Is that true?
He'll be 30 or something like that, and Harrison Ford was 33. So they were like, "What? How young Han Solo could this be if they're the same age?"
Younger than current Han Solo, who was 75.
That's fair. but, I mean, that's not really a big issue or anything, but it should be. I mean, it's going to be awesome. Let's be real.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, Phil and Chris Miller are making this, so it seems like it's a high chance it'll be awesome because they're great.
What if it's just like 21 Jump Street?
Want it to be 21 Jump Street. That is exactly what I want.
Okay. Fair.
I am into that. But they're saying the possible reason why he was cast so early, because that movie's not coming out until 2018. He was cast very early because he might be making a cameo in Star Wars Rogue One.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. Which I saw the trailer for finally, and holy shit!
Right? Oh yeah. My god, it was so good. Yeah. I'm glad we could talk about it now. Yeah, did you have like it was just it's awesome. It's so cool.
Yeah, I wanted to just watch it immediately again after it played in the theater.
Right, but then another trailer started, and you were like, "Oh, man."
Trailer started. for another movie I hadn't seen the trailer for, Suicide Squad. So, like, that was cool.
Man,
so
you probably saw, like, all the trailers that I've been talking about for months, and you haven't seen.
And so, I just saw them all at once. So
I'm guessing you saw Doctor Strange also?
Doctor Strange was in there, yep. Looks awesome.
Let's get your brief trailer thoughts, Mike. What were your, like, thoughts on all those movies?
I want all of them, mostly. Suicide Squad, I'm hoping, is, like, a silly, insane, like, ridiculous action movie, which the trailer to Bohemian Rhapsody lends itself to believe,
right?
Or lends you to believe. So hopefully they don't mess that up, because if it turns out to just be like a grim, dark, oh, we're gritty and action stuff, like, it will be a failure of marketing again. What was the other? Doctor Strange looks cool and weird, and I'm not really sure what's going on in that. I like that.
It looks like Inception, right? Like,
I was going to say, I'm really glad they're going full Inception, which I hope they do, because that's kind of like what Doctor Strange is about, like weird mind psion powers.
Yeah.
So I hope they, and it looks, from what we've seen in the trailer, it looks like they're going all in on that.
Absolutely, which is cool. And I think Tilda Swinton looks fantastic in the movie.
She does.
That's the ancient one. And that's gotten like some controversy recently because they changed the character's race.
Yeah.
Because it was in the comics, he's like an Asian man. An elderly
right.
Asian man.
It walks a fine line between being stereotypical hyper-racist Asian choice, like being like a wise ancient Asian man.
Yeah.
Or like, let's just make it a white person.
Right. But they also gender swapped it.
They did, but they could have split the middle. They definitely could have found cast an Asian woman or like a young Asian woman.
But I think Tilda Swinton looks fantastic in it, though. Like, she
does.
Really good,
I'm sure she'll be amazing. But it's just another race issue for Marvel, I guess. And then Rogue One looks outrageous. I want everything to be like that.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. Like, it looks so close to, like Force Awakens had like kind of a new look to it for the Star Wars franchise. This looks like A New Hope. Like, it looks aesthetically like almost the same.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so
it does. And I need to see the trailer again, but it kind of looks like it's going to be like it's about people breaking into the Death Star to get the plans. It looks like a intense espionage thriller.
Yeah.
And that's what I need. I need that kind of thing.
Yeah. Also, Donnie Yen just like kicking ass is like the Asian, hit the swordplay going on for a brief moment in the trailer. It was great.
It's the thing we always talk about with the Marvel movies, that like the smaller in between movies and do like these cool genre things.
Yep.
And that's what we're going to hopefully get with Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully. All right. And then, now that we're back on topic, the other cast news I want to talk about, Alicia Vikander was just cast as Lara Croft for the new reboot.
Yes.
Which is pretty, that's phenomenal casting. I think she's going to be a great choice. I'm not a fan of the other movies, the Lara Croft movies.
Right.
The ones with Angelina Jolie, although I haven't seen them since I was like 10.
Yeah.
But I remember not being like into either one. I've heard actually the second one is much better than the first. And I haven't seen either one since I was 10, so I don't really remember.
Yeah, it's been a very long time since I've seen those. I haven't played the newest Tomb Raider game,
right,
but the reboot Tomb Raider.
Yeah, I played the reboot, like the one from 2013, and it was really good. I really dug it.
It was amazing.
Yeah, and supposedly this is going to be taking cues from that. Like, that's what it's going to be kind of based on.
I kind of had held out hope, although it's the most unrealistic thing ever, that the woman who did the voice acting, motion capture, and was the model for the Lara Croft would be the choice for the movie.
Right.
Since she was Lara Croft for both video games.
Right.
That would never happen, though. No, but maybe one day.
Yeah,
that was... clearly she could act. Like, she did that. They feel like that's all her.
Yeah, that's true. So that's definitely true. And, a lot of people are saying that for that when the... Like, the Uncharted movie is still kind of in production. Like, it's been in production for years, but, like...
Yeah.
So there's never been, like, somebody cast as Nathan Drake yet. But, like, when it was first happening, I think people were saying, like, they should just get the guy... I forget his name, but the guy who did it in the games...
I think it's Nolan North.
North is what it is, yeah. And yeah, it's kind of the same thing. But anyway, Alicia Vikander's great casting, though. Like, she's awesome. There was rumors. There was rumors that it might be Daisy Ridley as Lara Croft, who would have also been great. But I'm sure she's busy, hanging out in the desert for another franchise.
Yeah, and I saw recently also Alicia Vikander started her own production company called, which is the best. It's Vicarious Productions. But it's V-I-K, Arius. Mark for marketing needs a pat on the back for that. and she's going to do her own production for female-centered roles and stuff like that. Because she's like, I'm sick of other people giving me roles. I'm going to make my own.
That's great.
Which is badass. So good for her.
Yeah.
And yeah, film news. Woo!
Yeah, all right, so that's the casting news. Let's get into the directing news that came out this past week. Two things I want to talk about there. Seth Graham Smith, who we reported was going to be directing The Flash a few months ago, is no longer directing The Flash, so we can retract that story.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it seems like the DC Universe is kind of in trouble. You know, yeah. Surprise!
Who didn't see that coming?
Yeah, I mean, it just actually recently came out that Ben Affleck has just been attached as a producer on the Justice League movies. And I think partially, it seems like Warner Brothers having a lot of trouble with Zack Snyder on those movies because they don't want to give him as much leeway as he had for Batman v Superman, for obvious reasons.
Right. I think potentially the future of the DC cinematic universe may rest on the shoulders of Ben Affleck. if he can do a really good Batman movie,
right,
which has been announced recently.
Yes, he's also directing The Batman, I think is what it's going to be called.
Okay. And like prop up these other things by producing, executive producing, or maybe even directing them. Who knows? I don't know. You know, if it could be like a last ditch effort of like Ben Affleck be the hero we need.
Yeah.
Then he could do it. I don't know. We'll see what the future holds in store for them. We have Suicide Squad coming out at the end of this year.
Right. Which could, hopefully it could represent like a significant change for the DC universe. I know it went back for reshoots to make the movie more comical.
Right.
So we'll see what happens. But Seth Graham Smith no longer directing The Flash. It's like he's never directed anything before. So I feel like this isn't that big of a loss. Like this is a chance for them to get somebody really cool on The Flash, you know? And after he dropped out, there was a rumor that James Wan might be dropping out of Aquaman too.
Oh, wow.
That would have been a blow. That would have been devastating. Yeah. James Wan insists he's still on board. He's still doing it. So, you know, fingers crossed there. That's the movie that I think has the most potential.
Yeah. If he could take the seventh movie of a franchise and make it the best one, I think that he could, if he goes on to direct more DC movies, that would be out of control and awesome. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other directing news that came out this week or this past couple weeks, this is not entirely like locked in yet, but it seems like it's pretty far along the way. Justin Lin might be directing Space Jam 2. and I have to say that as a question because it's such an incredulous thing.
Yeah, that could get filed under the but why though.
Yeah, exactly. So first of all, Space Jam 2 is a thing that does not need to exist.
Nope.
Right? And I'm saying this as somebody who will watch Space Jam anytime it's on.
Like as soon as we finish recording this.
And not out of like a genuine enjoyment of Space Jam, but like I was the age where Space Jam hit very like, you know, I was just really into it when I was a little kid, and I can watch it today and recognize that like it's bad. Like I see that it's a bad movie, but I kind of enjoy it on the level of like when I was 3 years old, I loved this, and like I remember scenes from this, and it's just like a comfort thing kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know?
I'll be honest, I had the Space Jam bed sheets. With one side was the Monstars of the pillowcase, and the other side was whatever their Michael Jordan's team's name was. I don't remember.
The Looney Tunes?
Oh, yeah, okay, that's fine. I don't know if they had a name besides Looney Tunes in the movie. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Toon Squad.
Toon Squad.
That's what their name is. And I'm very upset that I know that.
Proud of you, Mike.
So Space Jam 2 theoretically would star LeBron James in Michael Jordan's place. Which makes sense because he's like the biggest basketball player alive right now. Just
they were both once in a generation players. Been a new generation.
So there you go. The thing is, Justin Lin, this feels like a huge step back for him career wise to me. You know, he directed 4 Fast and Furious movies.
Right.
And now he's directing a Star Trek movie, which is coming out this year. Yeah. He's going to follow up Star Trek with Space Jam.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I don't know. I feel like that's it's one of those, like, do you want to make a lot of money kind of jobs? Like, I feel like Space Jam 2 would make insane amounts of money.
I mean, so. I feel like it might. I feel like there's definitely an audience for it that will pay money for it. But I think there's a larger audience that will outright deny, like, who will not pay for Space Jam. I don't know.
That's true.
I feel like there's a lot of Space Jam backlash.
Oh, man. I just pictured, like, the uproar over Space Jam and what that would be like, people picketing Space Jam and stuff.
It's like the Westboro Baptist Church, just like
yeah, exactly,
with the signs that God hates Space Jam.
God hates tunes.
Oh man, so that's I did want to bring that up because that is super weird.
I don't really know what to think about that yet.
Yeah, and it's not like a definite thing. I don't think Justin Lin's going to end up directing this. It's so beneath him, I think. Like
it would definitely be a really weird choice if he did it.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, that's the directing news. And I did want to get into another section of news, Marvel news, because A, we're talking about Captain America today, and also there's Marvel news all the time. And
yeah, this is a thing we never talk about.
So a bunch of Marvel news came in the last few weeks, probably mostly because, you know, it's tying into the promotion of Captain America Civil War. Right. One of the things, Marvel has pulled the Inhumans movie from the schedule, which was supposed to come out in 2019. That was the last movie on the schedule,
right?
That has been announced thus far. And it's pulled Inhumans out. And it's still saying they're going to make it, but it seems like it's going to be delayed or whatever happens. So, I mean, Mike, do you have, like, a dog in this fight? Like, do you care about Inhumans at all?
Not really. But, and I think that's kind of part of the reason they pulled it. I don't know much about the Inhumans, as character, like in the comics or anything like that. But I'm kind of glad they're pulling it because was it supposed to be phase 4 or 3? I feel like it was that for me, that was confusing.
It was considered like the last movie of phase 3.
Right. Right. I guess that makes sense. But I feel like, you know, the end of the Avengers Infinity Part 2 to be determined, ? Whatever that becomes, is meant to be a bookend. And to have this, like, extra movie after that feels weird for phase 3.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, I'm sure we have, how many movies, 3 years between that now and when that was supposed to happen.
Right.
So I'm sure they could have introduced it and used that to jump absolutely into phase 4 and stuff.
Here's the thing. The Inhumans have been a central part of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for the last 2 seasons. They've been, like, introducing them on the show and stuff. But here, the thing is, there's a growing divide between Marvel's film division and their TV division.
Yes.
Because Ike Perlmutter, who was removed from the film division, is now in charge of the TV one.
Oh, wow. That's weird. He's going to do a lot of weird shit just to spite the films, I think.
That seems like it's what's going on. The Inhumans have been kind of been building up in the TV section for a while. And the reason that they've been doing that, and they've been building them up in the comics for the past few years too, is because Marvel does not have the rights to the X-Men.
Right.
Right. Those are owned by Fox. And Marvel wants basically to tell X-Men stories with the Inhumans.
Yeah. Makes sense.
And so they've been slowly and not so slowly introducing those characters in the comics and have made one of the main characters in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is now an Inhuman. And they've been a central part of the show for the last 2 years. And so I think the fact they're pulling it from the schedule could potentially mean, like, you know, they're having some issues with the guys on the TV side.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah. I didn't think of that.
And even, like, the Russos were talking about Civil War before they're coming out with it in an interview, and somebody asked them about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and it's like, is what's happening at Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with all the Inhumans and stuff, there's so many powered people going on in that show, is that going to tie into Civil War at all? And the Russos basically looked at them blankly, and we're like, we have no idea what's going on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah,
we have watched it. Like,
that's intense. Yeah, and that's kind of how I feel. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is in its third season.
So it's about to finish the third season.
Yeah, and I know it probably draws a huge audience, but like,
It does not.
Oh, really? It doesn't.
It gets like less than 5 million a week, something like that.
Oh, okay.
It's not a huge hit. I think ABC mostly keeps it on to keep the Marvel branding alive.
Yeah. Right.
But I know it's been renewed season 4, and there's a potential spinoff happening next year.
For sure, why not?
But it's not like but even the Netflix shows, like, I feel like they don't get a huge audience. You know, they get like, but Netflix doesn't release their numbers, so nobody actually knows.
So nobody really knows. That's a good point. Well, I was going to say it kind of has this weird – it's this weird kind of afterthought, which it makes sense. It's two separate divisions, creative teams and everything. You know, they're not directly linked between the television and the film team. But, I mean, Agent Carter – Peggy Carter is a huge part of both film and TV.
Yes, that's true. So,
and Coulson, like, there are actual links that makes, like, that have effect on each other.
Yeah, I think it was easier for the movies to tie into the TV shows and vice versa before Perlmutter was head of the TV guys. Now he's right. The head, and it's a little harder. Although I think Marvel Film actually produced the Agent Carter TV show.
Okay.
Like, it's made in the TV division, but it has a lot of the film guys working on it.
Right.
So that's why that's kind of why you see Agent Carter on both sides.
Yeah.
Speaking of this, I guess the Russos were talking about Infinity War, and people were asking them, are we going to see the Defenders pop up in Infinity War? Because you have the Netflix series kind of building up to the whole Defenders thing with Daredevil and Jessica Jones. And they basically said, nope. Like,
oh man.
They basically said, like, yeah, it's really hard to make that happen. Because, A, you have to kind of build around the TV schedule, which is much different than a movie schedule. Because it's a lot longer, and it's a lot, like, there's a lot more that has to go into it from a time perspective. And B, like, the legal loopholes they have to go through with the film and TV divisions are really hard. So it seems like that's probably not going to happen. It could, like, happen, they're not saying no, but they're saying, like, it's almost definitely not.
Yeah. There's also, what, like, going to be 75,000 characters in those?
Something like that. Yeah. And also, like, what's Daredevil going to do against Thanos, you know?
That's
like,
a good point.
That said, like, what's Hawkeye going to do against Thanos? But Hawkeye's at least friends with those guys. Like,
he's already in.
Yeah. Like, they let him tag along, you know?
Yeah. It's going to feel very weird if, like, it's in New York. And, like, those guys don't show up. You know what I mean?
I mean, there's no guarantee that it's in New York. I'm sure if it is in New York, I would imagine they would show up. But yeah.
So they'll put it where there's no other superhero show stuff yet.
Yeah, exactly. But since we're talking about Infinity War, other news came out that Infinity War Part 1 and 2 will no longer be the titles for those movies. So that makes sense. That seems like they don't want to split. They don't want to give off the impression that it's one movie split into two.
Right, yeah. I haven't read the article or interview, but on the latest Slash Filmcast, they talked about it, and they mentioned that the Russo brothers said in where they announced it that splitting the movies into two parts, like they did for Harry Potter and for Hunger Games, the final movie, is really unsatisfactory for audiences because, like, hey, we're going to pause the story in this middle. You got to wait a year now.
Right. I mean, I think it worked for Harry Potter personally, but for the Hunger Games, yeah, it was... Yeah, it's very weird. Did not work at all.
So they don't want to do that. They said they're going to change retitle it and make they're still coming out a year apart. They're going to be two separate movies.
Yeah,
I guess it'll be one will be a complete story with the other. I don't know. It's not going to be paused in the middle. Basically,
I'm sure they will lead it. Like one will lead into the next one.
Right.
But you know, like you could say that about all the Marvel movies. Like they all kind of like leave enough threads to pick up in the next one.
Yeah,
which is part of the genius of the franchise. It's like you see them, and then you're like, "That was so great! I can't wait to see what happens now."
Yeah, exactly.
So people are tossing around Infinity War titles. I think it's probably going to be. I would imagine one of them will still be called Infinity War, and the other one will probably be called Infinity Gauntlet.
Maybe
that would make the most sense to me. Although, I think one of them, maybe the first one should be called Infinity Gauntlet. The second one should be called Thanos, the Hands of Fate.
Oh, I hate you so much. Wow. What if it's just a Mystery Science Theater movie?
That would be even better. just you pay a ticket to see a new Avengers movie and suddenly it's Mystery Science Theater doing Red Zone Cuba or something.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. That was a good job, Mike.
Thank you. And other Marvel news, let's get to this briefly. The Punisher spinoff series is happening on Netflix, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's exciting.
One more Marvel Netflix show that will exist.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm nervous. I mean, I know the Punisher isn't like part of the Defenders, I don't believe. He's just like shows up in some stuff.
Yeah, I feel like they'll probably... I don't know if he'll be on the team, but I imagine he'll be working to the Defenders TV show in some capacity.
Right. Yeah, well, what my biggest gripe with Daredevil Season 2 was, like, just get on with it already. I want the big team-up, super awesome, badass show. I'm just sick of, like, the hints of, like, hey, there's other stuff, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Like, we've already been introduced to so many of badass characters. I want them to be together, and I don't know. Mm. I'm just afraid this will be what... I mean, Punisher was the best part of Daredevil season two.
Okay, yeah, I actually... I started watching Daredevil season two. I'm on episode... I just finished episode five. Yes. I like it a lot more than Daredevil season one, actually. and yeah, Punisher is great. Jon Bernthal is doing a great job, and there's some phenomenal scenes in there. He has... I think it's like episode three, where it's just him and Daredevil on the rooftop for the entire episode.
Yeah, that whole conversation.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah. And actually deals with a lot of the same themes as Civil War does. And the Batman vs. Superman does, but does not engage well at all.
Yeah, that was a total fumble of what these themes are.
Yeah.
But so I'm excited for Daredevil season two. I hope they just take it and go somewhere crazy with it. I hope it's not, because this is the vicinity of all of those things happening in Hell's Kitchen in New York is what makes it so angry that these guys aren't literally running into each other every day, because it's like an 8-block neighborhood.
I think in this universe, Hell's Kitchen is not that small.
I know, and that's really annoying because it's a very local thing, everyone's stuff they're dealing with. So I hope he goes somewhere and does something crazy, like I don't know. Is not in Hell's Kitchen blowing people up, because we already saw in Daredevil season two that attracted Daredevil's attention. So,
right.
So I don't know.
Yeah. All right. And then one last bit of Marvel news. Rob Dan Jr. is going to be joining Spider-Man Homecoming, which is pretty cool.
Best choice ever.
Yeah. I mean, just briefly, based on their interactions together this movie, I'm down.
Oh, yeah. I'm in.
I'm in. It's I mean, I'm sure it'll probably be a pretty small role, I would imagine. Like, I feel like you want Spider-Man to kind of be, like, you want this to stand on its own.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, like, put Robert Downey Jr. in a small role, get him in, like, a couple of trailers, and, like, this movie's going to make, like, way more money than it would otherwise. And,
I think they figured out the formula by now.
Yeah, add Tony Stark.
Yep.
And then, like, step one, add Tony Stark. Step two, question mark. Step three, profit.
Profit. Pretty much. That's exactly what it is. Especially when it's the very... Oh, whatever. Never mind. It's a Spider-Man movie. Like, oh my God. And then also do those things.
Yeah, there was rumors that Michael Keaton was going to be joining the movie, actually. But that seems like that was shot down. He's not doing it anymore. But the rumor was that he was going to be playing Vulture, which would have been crazy because he was Birdman.
It's Birdman. If you just used a Birdman costume, that would have been amazing.
Just pulled that out of his garage and was like, I got this.
Yeah, this could work.
All right. So that's film news. That was a lot of time spent on film news, but that's all done. Let's get into our discussions.
These are my discussions. Just when I thought I could talk about movies all day, I talked about more. So we're going to talk about them today. These are my discussions. There is so much to see, you and me. So we're going to talk about movies for our discussions.
All right, let's get into our discussions for Film Bookcast today. Mike, what do you have to discuss?
So today I figured we were talking about Marvel for the last 45 minutes. Let's talk about it for 10 minutes before we talk about it for an hour. So for my discussions, I'm going to do the all new, all different lineup of the Marvel comics I think the last year or so it's when it started.
Yeah, right around the time Secret Wars kind of started and like got Secret Wars ended up getting delayed so long that they just started launching these comics anyway. okay. Even though Secret Wars hadn't ended yet, so
so around there,
yeah,
about a year or so, and I have, you know, I'm new to the actual buying and reading of comics, and my kind of barrier to entry for a lot of stuff was like, I want to read Spider-Man, but like, there's 40 years of Spider-Man, like, what do I do? How does this work? What even are comic books? Which I know isn't, like, a thing that should be real, because, you know, there's number ones all the time and stuff.
And, I mean, actually, like, individual issues of comics, especially superhero comics, are kind of designed for you to just be able to kind of just pick a one at random and read it and kind of get it in its entirety.
Right. But it's always been intimidating to me that there's been, this rich history for a lot of these characters. But I discovered that Marvel, within the last year, has launched this, after the conclusion of Secret Wars, this, like, huge event. They kind of rebooted, restarted the continuity.
Sort of. It's not really a reboot, but it's like, it kind of just merged their two universes.
Right. Like there's no more Ultimate or something like that.
Right, the Ultimate universe is gone. The Ultimate universe was a reboot, but it was kind of going on in conjunction with the original stuff. So the original stuff was still going on, but the Ultimate Universe was kind of just like new versions of all the characters. Right. So it started with Ultimate Spider-Man, and you basically got to see a new version of Spider-Man that was born, that was a high schooler in like the 2000s instead of the 1960s.
Right. Yeah. So, but I mean, and then there's that whole issue of like, what are your comic book universes, like different things, and Marvel has kind of smashed everything together, and there's a lot of new number ones coming out or have been out for the, you know, yep. Spider-Gwen, I just started reading. I picked up, there's, I think, 8 issues of it or 9. So it's stuff that's still very much within the realm of starting at number one and being able to catch up to it, because it's only 8 or 9 issues. So I picked up Spider-Gwen. I picked up Punisher number 1 just came out last week, I believe, while we're recording this. Black Panther came out last month. Excuse me. So I picked up those guys. They're all awesome. And then the most recent one was All New Wolverine, which is a female clone of Logan. And she is the most badass thing ever. And it's cool, and I love it. And people should read it. I don't know. But that's what I wanted to just talk about, is that it's a jumping on point if you've been intimidated by the volume of Marvel Comics before. It's like, hey, it's just starting. Get in now. And they're doing really cool stuff with it, like having Ms. Marvel be a Muslim female, Wolverine is female, Spider-Gwen. Like, there's lots of really cool shit going on that Marvel's doing.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a favorite of the ones that you've gotten?
Oh, I think Spider-Gwen is the most badass. Spider-Gwen's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was reading Spider-Gwen for a while, actually.
I just got volume 0 of it, which, I don't know, it's weird because it was like a event thing they did for Spider-Verse, right? It was when Spider-Gwen started.
Yep.
And then they were like, "Hey, let's make that a real comic." So
it was such a huge hit when Spider-Verse came out. Like, everybody loved Spider-Gwen like immediately.
Yeah. So she's got her own book now, and it's really cool. And then All New Wolverine, I picked up 2 issues of, and I regret not buying all 7 of them or whatever are out right now, because they're really cool.
Yeah.
And they do some really unique, cool stuff with the claws and everything, with her being a clone of Logan, but also being her own thing. And I think Wolverine now is his old man Logan, right? He has his own book where he's like thrown into the future or something weird, which is why she's
Wolverine. I'm not sure if it's the original Wolverine, because there was Death of Wolverine 2 years ago, I read. That was like the last Wolverine story I read, because he died. So it might be like an alternate universe Wolverine that's in the main universe now. I'm not really sure how it's working. There's a lot of confusing things going on.
Yeah, I don't really know yet, because I've only read the first 2 issues of All New Wolverine. But in the like introduction thing, it says that the original Wolverine, Logan, is no more, or has vanished, or something weird, or something like that. And then there's this other book, Old Man Logan. So I don't know. It's really neat. There's Spider-Man and Deadpool are teamed up now, and like really shenanigans. Right. So I don't know. Marvel Comics are really fun right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Always a good time. Did I ever tell you I met Jason Latour, who created Spider-Gwen?
What?
It was when I was at Comic-Con 2 years ago, New York Comic-Con. I went to the Spider-Verse panel.
Of course you did.
I was super into Spider-Verse, and it was like, right as it was starting, like Spider-Verse was like right getting into it, and Spider-Gwen had like Edge of Spider-Verse number 2, which introduced Spider-Gwen, had just come out, and Jason Latour had written it. And I got to the Spider-Verse panel, and I was one of the last people there, like it was packed, and I was just looking for a seat, found a seat, and I had to like ask the guy like who was there, like, "Hey, can you move over so I can get into the seat?" And he was like, "Oh yeah, sure, no problem." And he got up, and then I sat down next to him, and then this panel started, was going on, and they were like, "Oh, by the way, you guys enjoyed Spider-Gwen?" And everybody was like, "Yeah, Spider-Gwen!" And it's like, "Well, now you can meet the creator, Jason Latour." And the guy next to me stood up and walked up on the stage. I was like, "What?
That's the coolest. That's amazing." You took his seat, man.
Yeah, it was super crazy. I mean, I didn't take his seat. I took the seat next to him. Like, he was still sitting down. So that's pretty wild. And that was actually when they announced that they were making the Spider-Gwen ongoing comic.
Oh, okay.
That's pretty neat.
That's awesome. Yeah, so that's cool. And I want to check out Silk, which is another Spider-Woman thing.
Yeah, I love Silk. Silk first premiered like right before Spider-Verse came out. That was like tied into Original Sin, which was their big crossover like 2 years ago. Like her origin was tied into that, and then she became like a central figure of Spider-Verse, and then she got her own comic.
Yeah, there's a lot of really cool stuff like that. I know Scarlet Witch, I think, just came out or is on number 2 or 3 or something like that. So I don't know. If you've been invigorated to read the comics by the movies, now's a good time.
Yeah,
is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I've had to drastically limit the amount of comics that I was buying because I was buying way too many. I didn't have the money for it. Yeah. So right now I'm just buying Amazing Spider-Man, Silk, and Ant-Man. And I'll probably be buying Civil War 2 as that's coming out as well. Because that's,
right.
If you're unfamiliar, Marvel I think it's capitalizing on the fact that there's a movie called Civil War to put out a new, their big crossover this year is the sequel to Civil War 2.
And I think it's the all new, it's new Captain America, new Iron Man, and
yeah.
Captain
I mean, Marvel, it seems like the teams this time are Iron Man and Captain Marvel. That's like the two teams they're going against. So
and there's an all new Avengers lineup. I don't know. It's this neat stuff happening.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean the cover has like Star-Lord on it and all that. So should be a good time. All right, let's get into my discussions now. I have 3 movies I want to talk about, so I'll talk about them briefly so we can get into our Captain America stuff. First movie I want to talk about is Everybody Wants Some, which is the new movie by director Richard Linklater. And this is a movie that filled me with total delight. I loved it. it's basically in the same vein as Dazed and Confused, which you've seen in the trailers and stuff. It's like the spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused, but it's more focused on one subset of people. You know, Dazed and Confused, I mean, you've seen Dazed and Confused, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a... You know, that movie's kind of sprawling and kind of focuses on a lot of different, like, kinds of high schoolers all kind of just out on the same night. This is more focused on one subset of people, and that's college jocks, which sounds like it could be really annoying because, I mean, I went to college and I did not like the jocks very much.
Yeah, but those are the worst part of college.
Yeah, but these guys are really endearing and it's really fun. And it's a movie that's more about, like, finding yourself. It really illustrates the experience of college life very well. You know, it seems like its thrills are very surface level at first, but there's occasional moments of clarity that are very Richard Linklater-esque that kind of have them like espousing philosophy and understanding like what their place in life and stuff. And it kind of brings a whole new meaning to it. So it's a really great movie. Everybody should check it out. I really loved it. And, I think if you like Days Confused, you'd like this. Everybody Wants Some. Thumbs
approved.
Up. Mike Smith, seal of approval. another movie I want to talk about is a movie called Hush, which is directed by Mike Flanagan, who directed Oculus, which came out a couple years ago, which I saw once and I didn't like that much. This makes me want to rewatch Oculus to see if I had missed anything that special there. Full disclosure, I might have been drunk when I watched Oculus. I don't remember if I was drunk when I watched Oculus, but that's probably because I was drunk.
Yeah, that would make sense.
But Hush is a really solid horror film, and it's available now on Netflix. I think it played at South by Southwest a couple months ago, and then it like came to Netflix like a couple weeks later, like as it's like, I think it was a straight to Netflix kind of thing.
Right.
It's about a deaf woman who lives alone in her home and has to defend herself against a home invader. The home invader is played by John Gallagher Jr., who we just saw in 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Wow.
This movie makes a really effective use of sound, and it has like the sparse to the point filmmaking, which kept me really invested. And just the fact that the woman's deaf kind of adds like a different, like it's a different hook than I think most home invasion movies would have. And it's really intense, and I forget the name of the woman who plays the main woman, but she's really fantastic in the role.
That sounds awesome and also terrifying.
Yeah, it's really intense. And John Gallagher Jr. is also a pretty great psychopath as well, so definitely worth checking out. That's on Netflix. And then the last movie I want to talk about is Keanu, which is the Key and Peele movie.
There it is.
So I like Key and Peele. I'm assuming you do as well, Mike.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Key and Peele is good stuff. And, you know, I wasn't expecting much more from this movie other than just for it to be funny. And it delivered. This is a really, really funny movie. It has this great energy to it. Key and Peele are always great together. It occasionally goes for, like, something conventional when it could go for something more. But they just have, like, an easy chemistry. And there's, like, this over-the-top outrageousness that happens throughout. And the action is surprisingly well-directed. And it makes it really well worth it. And the supporting cast, Will Forte's in this movie, so you know I was a fan.
Oh, of course.
Luis Guzman makes an appearance. There's a lot of great comedic performances in this movie, I laughed out loud a lot while I was watching this movie. It's really funny, and the cat is adorable.
What more could you ask for?
Yeah. So, Keanu, definitely worth checking out. So those are my discussions. Those are Mike's discussions. Let's move on, Mike, into our discussion of Captain America: Civil War.
Captain, people are afraid. That's why I'm here. We need to be put in check. Whatever form that takes, I'm game. I'm sorry, Tony.
If I see a situation pointed south, I can't ignore it. Sometimes I wish I could.
Sometimes I want to punch you in your perfect teeth.
I know we're not perfect. But the safest hands are still our own.
That was from the trailer for Captain America Civil War. It's a new movie from directors Joe and Anthony Russo, who directed Captain America the Winter Soldier, and some choice episodes of Community and Arrested Development. The movie stars Chris Evans as Captain America, Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, Sebastian Stan, Anthony Mackie, Scarlett Johansson, Chadwick Boseman, Elizabeth Olsen, Paul Bettany, Don Cheadle, Jeremy Renner, Paul Rudd, Tom Holland, and that's just the superheroes. It also stars Emily Van Camp, William Hurt, Frank Grillo, Daniel Brühl, Martin Freeman, and a lot more.
Wow, I thought you were going to list the whole cast.
I listed everybody who's like basically a celebrity, like who's well known. That's a lot. There are a lot of humans in this movie.
There are a lot of humans. I wonder, like, this is a cap. It's not even an Avengers movie,
right? Yeah, just wait till Infinity War. It's going to be nuts.
It's going to be insane.
I think the Russos have said there's going to be like 67 characters.
Oh my god!
It's basically everybody. I'm hoping this is my hope, and let's just throw this out there before we get into the review.
Okay.
So that movie's going to have the Infinity Gauntlet in there, right. And one of the gems in the Infinity Gauntlet is the time gem.
Yep.
Which theoretically could make time travel possible. So I'm kind of hoping Agent Carter just pops back in.
Oh my god!
And like the entire cast of Captain America: The First Avenger, like the Howling Commandos and Tommy Lee Jones, and like.
Yes.
All those guys.
I'm in. Young Howard Stark.
Yeah. And old Howard Stark. Get both versions of Howard Stark.
I'm in.
In the movie.
I'm so in. Is that the last gem we don't have yet, I think, right?
I don't know.
The last Infinity Stone? I don't remember.
I don't actually know which one's which. Like, I just know that one of them's supposed to be the time gem. Yeah. I know there's one in Vision's head. Which right. is like the mind gem, I think.
The mind gem. Yeah, I think that's the only one we have a name for.
Yeah, there's the orb from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
Which I totally forget what that was. It's like the space gem or something, maybe.
The ether from Thor 2
and Loki's staff.
Right. Well, that's the mind gem.
Is that also the mind gem?
That was what was in the staff.
Okay.
The Tesseract. That was the other one we have.
Yeah, that's the other one. So I think there's like five. There's five?
Yeah, I think we have four of the five.
Okay. So I imagine Doctor Strange or Thor 3 will probably be where you introduce find the other ones.
Yeah, the last one.
Yeah. We'll see. The IMDb plot synopsis for Captain America Civil War. Political interference in the Avengers activities causes a rift between former allies Captain America and Iron Man.
That's it?
That is the entire... That is it.
IMDb, you son of a bitch. That's amazing.
That's good. That's good. So,
although, that's the exact kind of synopsis I want for a movie like this. This is why I don't watch trailers. It's that whole... I want to go in knowing as little as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, Mike, give me your general thoughts. I mean, so obviously we're both fans of the Marvel Universe. I think that much is clear.
Did the last hour tip you off on that?
Yeah. So we don't really need to go into like how much we enjoy this franchise, because obviously we do. And plus, we spent all the time when we reviewed Age of Ultron last year.
right.
So, Mike, just give me your general thoughts on Captain America Civil War.
This is some of the most fun I've had in a movie theater in a very long time, probably since Age of Ultron or Ant-Man.
Really?
And it's, I feel like they somehow managed to give all 25 characters or whatever it was, a moment. Somehow they all do something and are furthered, their characters are furthered in some way. The action in this is great, although I do have a minor gripe about some of the fights and stuff. But I mean, it's a minor thing. It actually luckily stopped halfway through the movie, and then the rest of it, that problem went away. Which was there's like some shaky cam for the fist fights, and like a lot for me, I couldn't follow some of the action and fighting that was going on.
All right,
but then when it mattered, which is the Well, it's not, I don't know, whatever. I don't want to say it because spoilers, I guess.
I mean, I don't think it's a spoiler to say the superheroes fight each other in this movie.
That's true. But, yeah. And it's in the trailer, the airport fight scene.
Yeah.
When all that goes on, that issue goes away. We move to wide, medium shots of action fighting and stuff. So we get to actually see what's happening because that's what we're there for.
Yep.
But it's super cool. And, you know, as we always talk about, Marvel has this perfect way of giving me these 2.5 hours of awesomeness and then making me want the next 3 years to happen now. I need these other movies now. they lay the threads out and show you what's going to happen or tease you just enough that I'm super excited for the next one. It's badass. We knew we were going to like it going in, and we did. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said in when we were doing CleetWorks as we were talking about like we were going to review this, I did not envision a universe where I didn't like this movie,
right?
I try to go in as unbiased as possible, and you know if it's a bad movie, I'll say it's a bad movie,
right?
It's a good movie, so I really enjoy this movie all around. I think it really effectively sells the ideological rift between Cap and Iron Man, and I think it does it better than the actual Civil War comic does, which. The Civil War comic, I think it's a good comic, but it is something that's like, I think it really paints Iron Man as the villain in that movie. In that comic, I mean.
In the comic, okay.
Yeah, in the comic, Iron Man is basically the villain. And, you know, to me it reads like that. I think it was marketed as like, which side are you on? Much like the movie was.
Right.
But the comic like really makes Iron Man into like a fascist who like hires villains to take down like...
Wow.
To take down the heroes that are on the other side. And it's like, whoa man. You know, and this movie... I think the real strength of this movie is that both characters are right.
Yes.
In their absolutely. Own way, which makes this a lot more thematically complex and really interesting.
Yeah. This is the good version of teammates fighting each other. I mean,
it's the good version of Batman versus Superman.
Yeah. Yeah. I hate to make that comparison because like,
it's really hard not to make that comparison.
Yeah. They follow the same themes, but in Batman versus Superman, Batman is literally forced to fight Superman, like, under, like, almost at gunpoint, basically. You know, when he's like, if you don't, we're going to kill Lex Luthor's plan, which I don't even know what it was still.
You think Superman is actually forced to fight Batman?
I got it backwards.
Batman was all for fighting Superman.
Yeah, no, you're right. I got it backwards. Yeah. We'll kill your mom, right? Yeah, Batman. We'll kill Superman's mom to fight Batman. But in this, they Iron Man and Captain America have actual opposing philosophies, and they're both right and they're both wrong at certain points and with the story, which is way more interesting to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And like their fighting is like a last resort kind of thing. Like they don't want to fight each other.
Yes.
And you can feel it in each other. And even in that big superhero fight scene, like at the airport, like these heroes don't want to fight each other. They all basically like each other. You know, most of them know each other. Some of them are just kind of thrown in there for kicks.
Yep.
And we'll get to that later. But, you know, you can tell, like, they even say, a lot of them are pulling their punches. They're, like, not, like, fighting for real. But as the fight goes on, you can see them kind of getting pissed off at each other. And, like, they really just want this thing to be over. They're just all very upset that they can't agree on this issue.
Right. Yeah, and to somehow convey that across all 25 characters. I'm going to keep saying 25, even though it's not.
Yeah, but it's really kind of remarkable.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I also think this is Robert Downey Jr.'s best performance as Iron Man. I think easily. And like his the quips, the Iron Man like traditional quips, they aren't as prevalent as they are in other movies. They're still there. He still makes some sarcastic jokes every once in a while. But I think it really like digs into his guilt and his pain at like having created Ultron, being responsible for that.
Right.
And also the fact that Pepper, never mind. I'm going to save that for spoilers.
nice save.
So there's that.
Right. And we're getting the payoff of 12 movies. And it's assuming we've seen them, which is very nice because we don't need someone to be like, well, remember that time this thing happened. And we don't, and it's just assumed we've seen it. We understand the relationships and where these characters are absolutely. At this point in the series.
At the same time, I think it holds up very well as like a standalone adventure, like a standalone movie. And the reason I say that is because I went to see this movie with a friend of mine who has only seen Iron Man 2 and nothing else.
That's not a real person. You made that up. There's no way.
I mean, and he only went to see Iron Man 2 because his date wanted to go at the time.
Okay, fair enough.
So he had not seen any of these movies, and it was like a last – like I didn't think he'd be interested, but it was like a last minute thing. I was like, hey, my other friends bailed on me because they're jerks, Kyle.
yeah, suck on that, Kyle.
He's going to listen to this and be very upset. But can you come and, you know, go to this movie with me? And he's like, yeah, sure. So he went and was not expecting much. Like, he saw the trailer and was like, I guess it looks kind of good. And as the movie ended, he turned to me and was like, so that was pretty fucking fantastic, right?
Yes. That's awesome.
I was talking to him afterwards, and he was like, you know, like, the movie started, and I was like, I have questions, but, like, I'll hold off on asking you because I'm sure they might explain it. Like, I'll wait like 2 minutes to see if they explain it. And in most cases, they did. And he didn't really have that many questions for me afterwards. His only real question was there's a point in the movie where you have Daniel Brühl's character, and you don't know who he is, but Daniel Brühl looks a lot like Sebastian Stan, who plays Bucky. And so, right. And so there's a point where if you're not familiar with the movies, you might be confused who's who for like a minute or two.
Yeah, that's true.
But otherwise, like it. I think it does a very good job of just being its own solid adventure. Well, I think you get more out of it if you had seen the previous movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or at least the Cap movies and the Iron Man movies.
Right.
And the Avengers movies, I guess.
Like, so mostly all of them.
Most of them. But, like, you don't have to see the Thor movies to get this. You know?
Right, that's true.
But what I do like about this movie, like, this is almost an Avengers movie at this point.
Yeah.
But I think it's still a Captain America movie through and through. Like he's at the center of this movie, and you know, I was worried that this movie might lose sight of that, you know, because of the fact that there's so many characters and the fact that Iron Man is in it and was going to be playing a major role. So I think while it juggles other stories and arcs, it does a tremendous job with them. The movie's main focus is on Cap, Iron Man, and Bucky, and I think that's how it should be in this movie. Like, I think it works really well.
Yeah, yeah. I still have a problematic relationship with Bucky as a character that's being pivotal to this, because I give no fucks about him still. None. But I've resigned myself to that. This is how it's going to be. Everyone else cares.
No, I do get that. And I think Bucky could have been more effectively built as a character in his last two. He's only been in two movies before this, Captain America 1, Captain America 2.
Right.
And Captain America 1, he's like a solid supporting role in that movie.
Yeah. The whole foundation of their relationship is like, Bucky was nice to Steve when no one else was.
Right.
I'm like, I don't think that's enough. I don't think it's enough. It's not enough for me.
Right.
But whatever.
He was Steve's best friend back in the day. And then he dies in Captain America 1, or he appears to die in Captain America 1. Right. And so he's not even like my top five performers in that movie.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm saying this to somebody who has seen Captain America 1 a couple of times, not in a little while. Although I watched some of it on TV the other day. Just because it was on like right before Civil War, but you know, I think of like Chris Evans, Haley Atwell, Hugo Weaving, Tommy Lee Jones, like there are people, Toby Jones, Arnim Zola, like I think of other people, or Neil McDonough as Dum Dum Dugan. Like, there's a lot of people in that movie who I'd rank above Bucky in terms of memorability. But even so, I think this movie does a lot more with the character than the first two movies did.
Yes, that's very true.
Like, even the second movie, the movie that was called The Winter Soldier didn't have that much of The Winter Soldier.
Yeah, exactly.
In it. But I think he does his most memorable work here as the character. And I think, you know, finally integrating him into the action, he provides a fun dynamic with some of the other heroes, especially Falcon. I think his relationship with Falcon is fantastic in this movie. I love Falcon and Winter Soldier together. And I want them to spin off and have, like, a detective series or something. Like...
I would totally watch like a Hawaii 5-0.
Right.
But
Bucky and the Falk.
Oh, that'd be great. There's a lot of, you know, old best friend meets new best friend kind of thing. There's a lot of tension, and it's great, and it's hilarious. Yeah. And that's another thing that this film and these Marvel movies have done so perfectly also, is be dealing with these very serious, dark, intense threads of, you know, guilt of creating Ultron and almost destroying a whole city and like a country almost, and all this, you know, dark and the power of, or the ability of power to corrupt and all these things, and also to take a break and have us laugh and want to actually be friends with these characters.
Yeah,
like that. Them, you know, can you move your seat up? No, like those kinds of just quips, throwaway stuff.
Yeah.
It's hilarious and make these characters feel very real.
Absolutely. I mean,
endearing.
This is, I think, easily Marvel's most serious movie, like the most serious MCU film. Like, I think it has a much more serious tone than any of the other movies that they made so far.
Yeah.
And yet, like, it's still fun. Like, it's still enjoyable time. And again, I don't want to keep comparing this to Batman versus Superman, but like, that's a movie that is so dour and so like pretentious and up its own ass about what it's trying to be. And it's like, no, this is an important story with Batman and Superman. These are gods who you should not like. And like, yeah,
right. Exactly. And that's the difference.
Yeah. And you know, it's like night and day, literally the dark night and day.
Yeah. The whole fight takes place in the rain at night in Batman versus Superman. This takes place at noon in an airport.
Yeah. And another thing about this movie, every hero kind of gets their moment, which I also like in this movie. Most of that is in that one big, expertly staged action sequence that is everything I believe fans are going to want out of this movie. Like, it's a long sequence. It's like some of the best superhero action I've ever seen. The Russos are just fantastic action directors, and that's not something I would have expected before Winter Soldier. Like, you know, they're guys who, you know.
We did get the paintball episodes.
Their big claim to fame was the paintball episodes of Community, which not even the first paintball episodes, the Western one was that.
Oh my god!
The Western one and the Star Wars one were their paintball ones. The original paintball episode was directed by one Justin Lin, who will be directing Space Jam 2.
That Space Jam 2 and the paintball episode will be the top of his IMDb page. I can guarantee it.
The Russos are phenomenal in this movie, in Winter Soldier. Like, they have such a great handle on these characters, and like just the way they direct action is fantastic. Yeah. And like you said, the beginning of this movie, it does have a lot of shaky cam in it. I think it mostly works. I was able to follow it pretty well because it kind of like starts off as a similar to Winter Soldier kind of thriller movie, and then kind of moves on, gradually becomes the big superhero action. And so as it becomes that, you see the more like clean style of
it kind of starts off as a Bourne movie in some way. It's an espionage elite squad jet setting around the globe to fight evil and criminals and stuff and these sneaky spy stuff. And then it evolves into this other superhero story. But once it moved past that, it was kind of I think it wasn't so much I couldn't follow it as like, I want to see what's going on. I want to see people doing all their badass super spy stuff, and like instead I gotta shakily follow someone into a table as they get smashed.
Daniel Brühl's character we should probably talk about. He plays Baron Zemo, mm-hmm. and he's kind of the villain of the movie, I think we could say. But he's also almost a non-entity. Like, he's not in a ton of the movie for a long time. Thing is, like, as the movie was going on, I was like, all right, like, I'm not super into this character. Like, he just kind of seems like a random psychopath. But towards the end, like, I gained a new appreciation for him. I don't think I realized how effective this character was until the movie ended. And he's a lot like Lex Luthor in Batman vs. Superman in that, like, he manipulates the heroes. But it's much more subtle. And his reason for doing so is actually, like, one of the best scenes in the movie. Like, his... and we'll talk about that in spoilers. But
I think he may be the best Marvel villain so far, because a lot of times it's like, I'm an evil guy that wants to destroy the world because I'm evil, and his is much more nuanced and interesting than that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's in enough of the movie for me to say definitively he's the best villain. Like, I feel like Loki hands down is like,
okay, yeah, that's true. Loki is, but I think he has the
he's the most understated of any of the villains, though, which is an interesting twist. And a lot of the things in this movie are very different than the other Marvel movies too, which I appreciate. But let's talk about Black Panther, who is fucking awesome.
Oh my god, yes. I'm team Black Panther now.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, part of what I like about this character is that he's not really on Team Cap or Team Iron Man. He's on Team Black Panther. Like, he's on his own. Yeah. He's on his own. He's doing his own thing.
Oh yeah, he's means to an end. I got a thing. I got an agenda, and you guys are helping me, so I'm with you.
And he's a central part of this movie's narrative. Like, he had a much bigger role than I thought he was going to, and he does a spectacular job. I think Chadwick Boseman is fantastic in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, he's regal, like, he feels like royalty, but at the same time, he's impulsive because he's a kid, like, he's a young person.
Yeah,
and his movie can't come soon enough.
I'm very excited for what that means for Black Panther, the way he's handled. And he's, we know so much about him, even though he, you know, has maybe like, I don't know, 5 minutes of dialogue total, like actual dialogue. He's on screen for a lot, but he's not speaking for most of it.
Yeah.
And we know a lot about him. He's interesting, whatever. We are hinted at his background and history of where he's from and what that means for this world as a whole.
Yeah. And like, he's already Black Panther when the movie starts. Like, he's just been, he's just been the Black Panther for a while. And he's like, yep, I'm Black Panther. That's what I do.
Yeah. It's so cool. It's so interesting. And I was really nervous about how they were going to shoehorn these new Black Panther and Spider-Man, you know, into these stories. I was nervous for before the film came out.
Yeah.
And I think they did an amazing job with both of them. I think we'll probably talk about Spider-Man.
I was about to talk about Spider-Man now, actually, if you want to. Not like in depth, but I did.
But
want to.
we could talk about him also. Yeah. But I think this is the hype train for Black Panther has begun. And with the launch of the new comic last month, I mean, it's obviously timed to be like, oh, we're going to make peak Black Panther right now.
Yep, this is the time. This is the time to jump on board the Black Panther train. Yeah.
And it's really cool.
And yeah, so also the other big introduction of this movie is Tom Holland's Spider-Man. And it's interesting you use the word shoehorn, because I did feel like he was kind of just like...
he was, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that makes sense, because it's like they were still in the legal battle of trying to get Spider-Man in the movie as the movie was being filmed.
Yeah, they acquired the rights pretty late in the process, I think. Yeah.
So Spider-Man does not serve much narrative purpose other than to give Iron Man's team one more player. Right. But Tom Holland is delightful in the role. yeah. And Spider-Man, who, like, full disclosure, Spider-Man is my favorite superhero of all time. Like, he gets a lot of the best laughs in the movie, as he should. Tom Holland is fantastic in the movie. Like, he is so good as Spidey. And I saw a lot of people saying he's the best Spider-Man. And I can't say that for sure yet, because he's not in that much of the movie. And I don't want to say that before his solo movie comes out. But right. He's a good shot at it. Like, he's really good.
Yeah.
Toby's still my man. But, like... Tom Holland is aces. I dig him a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I haven't read a whole lot of the comics. I mean, he's Spider-Man's one of those guys that's just kind of in the popular consciousness in everything anyway. Yeah. So, but we know he's quick witted. He never shuts up during anything, and they get it right. They get it the most right, I think, in this. Yeah. And it's a joy. It's so much. It's like. Very, I don't want to say clearly just fan service for him to be there, but like it mostly is.
Yeah, kind of. It is a point where like the movie's like he doesn't show up until like more than halfway through the movie, I think, and it's literally the movie basically just like stops for like 3 minutes to introduce Spider-Man. But like that's a good scene. Like it's an enjoyable scene. It just definitely feels like the flow just like cuts off.
Oh yeah.
But it's worth it to get him in that fight because he is. Phenomenal in the fight, like he's great.
Oh yeah. It's the best. It's a joy.
Absolutely. And also, like we said, Spider-Man gets a lot of the big laughs in the movie. Same goes for Ant-Man. Paul Rudd's great.
Oh yeah, that's what I when my friend texted me that about Ant-Man and Star-Lord. I can't wait to see like that tension of like the funny man, like who gets that role.
Yep.
It's gonna be so much fun.
Oh man, man, this whole universe is going to go nuts in a couple of years. Like,
yeah, I'm interested to see how Doctor Strange fits into this kind of wacky, silly, big collaborative fight stuff going on. Because, I mean, I don't know much about Doctor Strange, but that movie, at least that trailer, seems like it's going to deal with some very intense, serious, abstract
themes.
Absolutely. And then... here comes Ant-Man. Although I think Ant-Man and Doctor Strange are going to be very closely linked because we know what the Phantom Zone is.
That's true.
In Ant-Man, when he like goes into that whole kaleidoscope universe.
Yeah, very true.
So
very true. Could definitely see that. And yeah, I did want to say this movie's conclusion. Won't say what it is yet. We'll get into spoilers. But I think it's very different than the usual Marvel Universe films, which often end in a big CGI battle. A lot of times there'll be an airship crashing into a city.
Right.
You know, that's what we see in, like, Avengers 1 and 2. We see that in Winter Soldier, Thor 2, Guardians of the Galaxy. They all have, like, very similar endings.
Right.
And they're actually – those endings are actually used as a part of the motivation for this movie's plot.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of amazing because I've seen a lot of people, like, criticize those endings as they've gone on, being like, a lot of these movies end with the same thing, a lot of destruction, a lot of, like, you know, yeah. CGI battles going on. And the movie, this movie begins with basically saying, like, yeah, a lot of people died in those
right.
in those things. And it's actually kind of remarkable because, you know, and you remember watching Age of Ultron, and in that movie, that big final fight in Sokovia, you know, so much of that final battle is about them trying to save as many people as possible.
Right.
Right. Like, just, and they even say at one point, like, this isn't over until everyone's safe, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then this movie shows you that they couldn't save everyone. Like,
yeah. Yeah. It was really, it was, yeah. I mean, I don't want to get into spoiler things, but it's very much about the collateral to all of the, which was, you know, the Batman vs. Superman was motivated by collateral damage in their big finale.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, again, very similar movies, but just totally different at the same time.
Like, yeah, the tones are completely opposite end.
Yeah, so it definitely utilized very well those criticisms. So that's it. I don't think this is my favorite Marvel Universe film. Further viewings could change that.
Yeah.
I do think it's a little overstuffed. Certain characters could have been utilized more, especially Emily Van Camp's Sharon Carter, who is used really well in the movie as, like, the CIA operative. But I think she could have been in the movie more. Like, she's not in that much of it.
Yeah, I think I would have benefited greatly from having rewatched Winter Soldier right before seeing this.
Okay.
It's been a while since I've seen it.
Yeah, the thing is, she doesn't play that big of a role in that movie either. But like, she's good in both. Like, I like her in both, and I really wish, like, she would get a bigger role in these movies, because she's really good, and I think she's a pretty good foil for Chris Evans, and I like her presence in these movies. So hopefully she gets, like, a bigger thing to do in, like, Infinity War or something.
Yeah.
Or she can be utilized elsewhere. I think Winter Soldier is still my favorite of the Marvel movies, which I think is a perfectly paced action thriller with Chris Evans really breaking them to full hero mode there. Like, he is phenomenal in that movie. And also Age of Ultron, which is in all its glorious Joss Whedon-iness, is up there for me too. But this is still very high up on the list, Civil War. Like, I think it's, like, one of their best. Like, it's really good.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't really decided yet. I'm going to wait till I see Civil War 8 more times or something. I don't know. I want to see this movie as many times as I can.
Yeah.
Right. Which may be the sign that it's my favorite. I don't know.
Could be. All right. So should we move into spoilers for Captain America Civil War, Mike?
Yes, we shall.
All right, let's do that. Let's move into spoilers for Captain America Civil War, starting right now. All right, spoilers for Civil War, starting right now. General Lee surrenders to General Grant at the Appomattox Courthouse and the North Winds.
God damn it. Oh, I should have been expecting that. All right, thanks for listening to our podcast. Good night.
Oh, wait, you wanted spoilers for Captain America Civil War?
Oh, wait a second.
Right. So the big twist in the movie, Bucky Barnes, while brainwashed, killed Tony Stark's parents in 1991. Genuinely did not see that coming, but it is set up very well in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's why I felt that I should have seen Winter Soldier, I think. Because there's that revelation immediately followed by the Captain America knew,
apparently. Right? Which I didn't know the Captain America knew either.
yeah, it felt like that was supposed to be a heavy emotional,
right? I think
admission confession that, like, just had no effect on me because I didn't know.
Right. I mean, from what I understand, because I saw some people saying the same thing online. You know, there's that scene in Winter Soldier where Cap and Black Widow are found, like, this underground Hydra base, and they get, like, this computer that shows them, and it's Arnim Zola from Captain America 1. Like,
right.
His brain is, like, logged into the computer, and he's, like, showing them different things that Hydra has done over the past, like, 50 years, and you see, like, a lot of, like, newspapers flying past, and one of them is that Howard and Maria Stark were killed. And it doesn't make it explicit that Bucky was the one that killed Tony's parents. It just says right. that Hydra did it. And it happens very quickly, so you might even, like, miss it.
Right.
But it's definitely, it looks like it's information that Cap would have known.
Yeah.
And
that makes
even,
sense then.
Even then, I think, even if Cap didn't know that it was Bucky, like, he knew that it was Hydra that did it, and Bucky was working for Hydra.
Right. So he could have put it together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was all, that in that moment, I was like, what? But that doesn't really take away from the revelation of Bucky killed the Starks. And I love that moment, the shift from, like, they've been fighting over, like, philosophical and lofty, you know, stuff about power and who should be in control of what, to this is the most personal thing that's going on. Like, this is this shit is not business anymore. It's personal.
Yep.
And it makes that fight, their conflict, all the more real. And
Absolutely,
it's great. It was awesome storytelling.
Yeah, that was fantastic. And, you know, it like I said, it sets it up very well. There's frequent obscured flashbacks to the event that, as it happens. So you see, like, in the beginning of the movie, like, you see somebody attacking somebody, but you don't know who. And then later on, you see that it's Bucky attacking somebody, but you don't know who. Right. And it just kind of, like, builds and builds. And then, you know, brings the movie to that conclusion with Tony just losing control and fighting Captain Bucky with everything he's got. And so that's, like, the finale of this movie, this conclusion. You know, Zemo, Daniel Brühl's character, basically gets what he wants, which is to tear the Avengers apart.
The bad guy wins.
The bad guy basically wins. And so it's just Cap and Tony fighting and Bucky's there too. And, you know, it's not clear whether Tony's going to kill Bucky. Like, I don't think Tony would have killed Bucky in the end. It's possible that his rage might have, like, made him do it. But that final moment where Cap has Tony down.
Oh.
And there's that moment where Cap has a shield up and he's, like, about to bring it down. And you think for a second, like, he couldn't. Like, there's no way.
Murder Iron Man?
And then he breaks Tony's reactor, depowering his suit.
Yeah.
Perfect. You know, unlike Superman.
Right.
Captain America doesn't kill.
Exactly.
Yeah, that is perfect. And that whole sequence was fantastic.
Yeah. And just to shit on Batman versus Superman one more time. that's the same moment of, if I wanted it, you'd be dead. But we don't have to have them tell us. We don't need to have the Joker have damage tattooed on his forehead. Like, we get the implication and the subtext of that exchange, that moment, without it being told to us, which is what this movie does. Like we said earlier, that it's like it expects us to know who these characters are 12 movies into their history. Like, we don't need to have it explained to us.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And some other things that happen in this movie, Pepper Potts is not in the movie because it seems like she and Tony are on a break.
Right.
Which they address in the beginning of the movie, and it seems like that's part of what informs Tony as a character in this movie, I think, that he's, like, dealing with this kind of loss of losing Pepper because of his actions with Ultron, it seems like. Like, because of the fact that he destroyed an entire nation, basically, you know, and an island lifted up into the sky because of him.
right.
You know, it definitely seems like the kind of thing that would put a strain on a relationship. So Pepper is gone in this movie, and I think that the fact that she's not there to talk him down and to, like, kind of be with him as, like, a person definitely informs a lot of his actions in this movie, I think. Another thing that happens, Agent Carter dies.
Yeah. That was shitty.
Yeah. It wasn't surprising to me, but it was upsetting, definitely. And especially, like, I'm somebody who really digs the Agent Carter TV show. And so as somebody who's watched that show for the last 2 years, to see this character, this beloved hero from this TV show die, is very upsetting. And, you know, it's also because the TV show might be canceled. Nobody really knows yet. So,
oh no. Yeah. And even that was handled beautifully and understated. There's so much that's just, you know, we're shown, not told so much in this film. Like, he gets a text that says she's gone in her sleep and we're expected to know who it is. And it's, and it's much more impactful and emotional that moment, without being like, "Hey, this person from these other movies is like, we just know."
Yeah. And I mean, and also this is where you find out that Sharon is related to Agent Carter,
right?
Because in Winter Soldier, I don't know if you remember, they never say her last name; she's just known as Sharon.
Yeah, I didn't. Which is another thing, I didn't remember who that was, and I was like, weird that she's given a eulogy directly to Captain America. because I hadn't seen Winter Soldier in a very long time.
Right, yeah. I mean, she was the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who was, like, assigned by Nick Fury to spy on Cap at the beginning of the movie, and so she lived next door to Captain America, and he had, like, a flirtatious relationship with her. And so she doesn't play a huge role in the movie. She's kind of there at the beginning, and then she's there when Cap takes down S.H.I.E.L.D. at the end, and she's one of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents who takes Cap's side.
Right.
But so she, like she plays a bigger role in this movie, I think. But even then, I feel like she should have played a bigger role.
Yeah, like, I mean, I was able to put it together that like, hey, they have history and stuff because then they talk about it.
But. Yeah, but I liked her role in this movie where she was like working for the CIA and was just like feeding Cap information about the Winter Soldier as it was going on.
Yeah, that was really badass.
Definitely cool, and I feel like she should have been a part of the big fight at the end, the big superhero fight at the airport. Because I think she could have been a big I don't know how they would have worked her in there, but like I feel like she is a major enough character, I think, where like, or it could have been a good time to define her as a character to bring her in. Because I really would like to see her play a much bigger role going forward. Cap kissing Sharon Carter. During one of those scenes where she feeds him information, is my favorite moment of the movie. Because right after that, there's the Falcon and Bucky, like, watching him in the car, and he looks back, and they're both giving him, like, the bro head nod. Like,
yeah, it was perfect.
That's my favorite moment. That's my favorite scene in the movie, because it's just so, it's nice. It's a happy moment.
It's one of those, what we were talking about earlier, where these characters feel real, they're friends, they hang out, it feels like, and I want to hang out with them, and I want to be there, and it's awesome. I don't know.
Absolutely. Other thing about Daniel Brühl's Baron Zemo, he's a very far cry from his comics counterpart. You know, Baron Zemo in the comics is like this crazy, maniacal dude in like this giant purple jumpsuit. He was the guy who like was there and got Captain America frozen in the ice, and it's like this whole thing. And he's basically an insane person. And here he's just a man consumed with grief over the death of his family in Sokovia. Which is a surprisingly heartbreaking motivation. And his scene with Black Panther at the end is amazing.
Yeah, the scene with him and Black Panther is unbelievable. What goes on, the characterization of both of them, their evolution in that moment together is, I don't know, triumph of writing? I don't know. it was awesome. It's cool.
I mean, this is like Zemo's the guy who killed his dad, but not intentionally. Like it was like collateral damage, you know, as he attacked the UN. Yeah. And Black Panther spent the entire movie just out for revenge against whoever killed his dad, and he thinks it's Winter Soldier for a long time. Eventually, he realizes it's not, and then he realizes it's Zemo, and he basically discovers this like independently of anybody else because he's the best. and so you know, he was seeking revenge for his father's death. And in the end, he does not kill Zemo. Like, he was all prepared to do it. And then, like, Zemo talks about how he lost his family and stuff and realizes that, you know, Black Panther shouldn't do it. Like, he shouldn't kill him. And then in that process, he also prevents Zemo from killing himself, which is, like, I think one of the most powerful moments in the movie. Probably the most powerful moment in the movie.
Yeah, he manages to find his ideology in that moment. It seems like he forgives Zemo. He's like, you know, he doesn't kill, he doesn't exact his revenge. He stops him from killing himself, and he's like, I don't know, it makes Black Panther be a full character. Because up to that point, he's kind of just this guy who's along for the means to an end, wants his revenge. And then at that moment, he becomes a full character with his own set of ideals and thoughts about what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was fantastic. That was a great scene. Other things, I liked Scarlet Witch and Vision's relationship that was going on in this movie.
Yeah,
I like the development of that.
Yeah, that was pretty hilarious. The Vision is still one of the weirdest, least fleshed out or completely explained characters so far. And I think that's just the nature of what he is, and he doesn't even know what he is really.
Right.
So I could forgive that, even though I wish we got more time to see whatever he is.
Right. I love how they like play up his weirdness by making him do like very mundane things.
Yeah.
Which is he's walking around wearing like sweaters.
Yeah.
He's like making like paprika or something. Like he's putting paprika into like a dish or something.
Yeah. He's trying to make food that he doesn't know what taste is. So he can't cook it. Like walks through walls instead. And he's like, oh, the door was open, so I thought this was okay. just really like, you know, the line at the end of Ultron. And he says, well, I was born yesterday. Like, there, right. He's so such an alien, new, has, you know, doesn't know what the world is.
Yep.
But also, apparently, Scarlet Witch is, like, the most powerful being on Earth. which I'm okay with. She's super badass.
She's cool. She's very cool. And she's part of the reason why everything happens in this movie.
Right.
At the beginning of the movie. At the beginning of the movie, there's this, you know, sort of heist sequence with Cap, Falcon, Scarlet Witch, and Black Widow. And, you know, it's they're taking out Crossbones from Winter Soldier, Frank Grillo's character, who survived at the end of Winter Soldier, but, like, just barely. And yeah. He does not make it out of this movie. Which,
definitely not.
Partially because of Scarlet Witch, although it's really his fault.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so basically Crossbones is about to explode, and it's going to be in this crowded street. Scarlet Witch uses her powers to lift him up into the air, but in doing so, he explodes by this building.
The building, yeah.
And it ends up killing several people.
So it's interesting that that is the moment that brings Black Panther in, because they say it's like Wakandan aid workers were in that building or something like that.
Something like that, yeah. And that is like the kind of the powder keg that, like,
right,
you know,
which is interesting.
It's the assassination of Franz Ferdinand. Which,
Civil War.
Of the Civil War.
Yeah. Yeah, which is interesting because in Age of Ultron, Iron Man and the Hulk destroyed a city in Wakanda. Like, in their fight. They were in Wakanda.
They were in Wakanda, yeah.
I assume, because that's where the vibranium was. That's where we go with the
that makes sense.
Salvage yard. So, I mean, whatever. It's just added to the list of damage, that which is kind of the build-up to this movie.
Right. I mean, yeah, it definitely seemed like what was going on was the Sokovia Accords were, like, being prepared for a while. Yeah. Like, people were, like, building them up because of all the damage that happened to Sokovia and all the various damages that have happened in in all the other movies in, like, New York and Washington and all that stuff. And so this event was the time for them to be put into action, basically.
Right, yeah. So we see Scarlet Witch can contain an explosion. We see her fly. We see her, and I love the moment in the opening fight sequence thing with the, you know, just like we practiced, and she like throws Cap with her powers.
Yeah, that was cool.
And that's, you know, we always, anytime the powers play off each other, that's the most exciting thing. That's like, this is what we want. It's like fan fiction.
It's hero, fans. Like the hero interaction. Like these movies handled their ensemble so well because they have all the heroes interact with each other.
Right.
Which is like, you know, you watch Batman vs. Superman, and Superman and Wonder Woman don't say a word to each other.
Yeah, like they just punch hard.
Yeah.
That's it.
Like, Wonder Woman shows up, Superman doesn't say anything, Superman dies. Spoilers. Anybody who cares has seen it already. Superman dies, even though Wonder Woman could have easily done the thing that Superman did, and not died from the thing.
Yep.
You know, and that's really a lack of communication on their part.
Yeah, you're right.
You know,
but we also see the thing that made me realize, like, oh, she's the most powerful member of the team when she like crushes Vision into like the earth.
Yeah.
She like changes how gravity works for him and like smashes him down into the ground. Was a really kind of terrifying and frightening moment for what her powers could be.
Yeah.
Which was kind of like the development of her character throughout the film, is like people were afraid of her because of what she can do. But that was really fucking cool. Just the way, I don't know. It was neat.
Absolutely. And also, one other big spoiler, Ant-Man goes giant in that big fight. Ant-Man becomes Giant-Man, and it is a terrific moment. Made even better when Spider-Man references Empire Strikes Back and takes him down like an AT-AT.
Yeah, that's my new favorite thing with Disney owning Star Wars and Marvel, is they can make those references. Oh, that was so awesome. Yeah, but, and just the, like, it's another, the ensemble, like we were just talking about, having him say to Cap and Falcon, I think, when he's like, I'm going to do a thing that if I might die, I might tear myself in half. And just, I don't know, that whole scene when he has Cap throw the enlarged disc at the truck and like all this really cool shit, them doing stuff together, it's just a joy to behold. And I want that. I would watch a 2.5 hour airport fight scene, what I'm saying.
That's, I mean, that was absolutely the highlight of the movie, I think, in terms of like what you can accomplish, like, after 8 years of building up this universe, you know, it's pretty crazy.
And even with somebody who's introduced 20 minutes before that, with Spider-Man being the best part of that.
Absolutely.
When they're like all running at each other, Spider-Man's like, they're still running. Like, it's so funny. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom Holland really sells that role really well. Like, yeah. It really feels like a 15-year-old Peter Parker.
Yeah,
which absolutely. I mean, Tom Holland's like 19, I think, in real life. Definitely the youngest person who's played Spider-Man so far, which is great. It becomes like a really great counterpoint for everybody else, because everybody else is like an adult, but also
And has done this already.
And has done this many times. Like, even like Black Panther, who we've never seen before, it's implied that like he's been Black Panthering for a while. You know, and even Ant-Man, who like he just had his movie last year, theoretically, he just got his costume a year ago. Like, he's still doing his thing, and like,
yeah,
you know, he's still being Giant Man and stuff now. Like, it's crazy,
right? And Ant-Man and Spider-Man get to be the surrogate for the audience when they kind of fangirl over what's going on.
Yeah,
and the moment when Ant-Man, it's one of my favorite quips in the thing, when he's like playing at being a superhero. You know, and he's like, "Here's your shield, Captain America." And he's like, "Oh, yeah." it's so ridiculous. He's so out of his league.
Yeah, yeah. And it's great because Spider-Man and Ant-Man, they don't have like any like investment in what's going on at all. Basically, they're just kind of called
they're help.
Yeah, they're like help because it's like, you know, Ant-Man knows Falcons. He's like, "Yeah, all right, I'll help you guys out." And Spider-Man was recruited by Iron Man, who's like, "Yeah, all right, I'll help out, whatever."
Yeah, and mostly Spider-Man gets the audience surrogate, where he is like, "Dude, you have a metal arm? That's awesome!" And like, just commenting on just the absurdity of what's going on, and being like a total noob at everything. And it's
also one of my favorite movies in the movie is when Spider-Man and Captain America bond over being from New York.
Yes. Oh, that was perfect.
Which is pretty great.
Yeah.
So that was awesome. And I mean, what was I going to say? Yeah, I mean, the fact that Spider-Man's included in this movie also, I think, is kind of an important part in Tony Stark's arc. You know, because you kind of see how far Tony has gone, where, like, everybody's kind of questioning Tony's, like, logic. Like, you brought, like, a kid into this? Like, this is no place for a kid.
But, right.
Like, Tony Stark is, like, so far gone at this point. Like, he's so, like, desperate to get Captain America and sign these accords and to get on his side and, like, understand that Bucky's, like, a menace and, like, needs to be taken in.
Yeah.
You know, that he's willing to, like, he overlooks the fact that a kid might be out of his element here and, like, might get hurt.
Right.
You know, and so it's an important part in the movie where, like, Spider-Man's like, "Oh, I can still fight." And Tony's like, "No, go home."
Yeah. You know, he, like, passes out. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That was a great moment. And I mean, should we talk about the Spider-Man and Iron Man scene when he's recruited?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. So about having the movie, there's like a scene where Black Widow's like, "Hey, do you know somebody who can help out?" And Tony Stark's like, "Yes, I do." And he goes, and then it cuts to Queens, and
then it's just smash cut to apartment blocks. Ridiculous.
Smash cut to Queens, you can hear people in my theater going, "Oh man, here it comes!"
Yeah, everyone was it's so excited. Everyone's like smacking the person sitting next to
Spider-Man. Yeah, and so you see Peter Parker walking into his house, and Tony Stark's there, and he's hanging out with Aunt May, played by Marissa Tomei.
And I
really enjoyed the meta jokes that Tony keeps commenting on how high Aunt May is.
Right. Yeah. It's very odd that Aunt May keeps getting younger and younger and younger in every movie.
Yeah. I mean, I think Marissa Tomei is going to be great. Like, she's going to be really good. And she was very enjoyable in the scene that she was in.
Yeah.
But yeah. And so you have that scene where Tony's like flirting with Aunt May, and it's a very funny scene where he's like interacting with Peter Parker. But like, "Oh yeah, you know, that genius grant that you applied for, you won." It's like, "Yeah, what grant was that? What?"
Yeah, I love it. Also an interesting, I'm going to put an extra layer on the Spider-Man and Aunt May, or Peter Parker and Aunt May, now live in an apartment house block instead of a house.
Right.
like a single parent, not even their parent, like retiree aged, I think, is supposed to be. In the right. books, well,
in the comics. In the original comics, Ant-Man and Uncle Ben are like these decrepit, like old, old people. Much like in the Sam Raimi movies, like that's kind of how they are. And then if you actually read the Ultimate Spider-Man ones, they're much younger, like much like Sally Field and Martin Sheen in Amazing Spider-Man. And this seems like they're going a few years younger than that. So
we'd never be able to like afford a house in Queens anymore,
right?
So like they got to go live in this apartment. I don't know. Add that layer of commentary onto that.
Yeah, and much like Black Panther, I mean, Spider-Man is basically introduced as already having been Spider-Man for at least a little while. I think they were saying like 6 months or so. Like, he's been doing the Spider-Man thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, at one point, Tony's like, oh, you know, how'd you get into this? And Spider-Man starts to go into it, and Tony's like, ah, I don't care.
Yeah, and he just kind of throws it's a long story. Like, how'd you get these powers? It's a long story.
Yeah.
Because we know yeah. Spider-Man, as we said earlier, Spider-Man's been around for 40 fucking years. We don't need...
And we've seen this happen in two other movies at this point. Like, exactly. two other origin story Spidey movies. We don't need it.
We don't need it, exactly. And I love that about it. And it's Marvel... In 15 minutes of Spider-Man in this film have shown that they do a better job than Sony did in six movies or five movies.
I would say in two movies, because I do like the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies very much. But
that's true. Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, so Spider-Man's really well handled. And you get like you don't get a with great power comes great responsibility, but you do get like a similar sentiment where Spider-Man says something along the lines of like, if you have the powers that I have and you don't do something, like you're basically at fault.
Right. You're the bad guy.
You're the bad guy, which kind of is sort of in line with what Tony's trying to do throughout this movie as well. He's trying to take responsibility for his actions.
Right. I like that. You know, we don't need to be told the Uncle Ben story because we've got it already. And we get the hint that it's like they reference that it's happened. Sort of. That's kind of the with great power comes great responsibility. He's had that talk already.
Yes.
He already knows. And now he gets to be all excited that the shield doesn't obey the laws of physics. And like, all these awesome quips.
Yep.
So yeah, that was exciting.
That was great. Should we talk about the post-credit scenes?
Of course.
All right, let's get into those. So there are two post-credit scenes in this movie. The first one, midway through the credits, is a Black Panther tease.
Yeah.
Which basically shows Cap and Winter Soldier. Winter Soldier goes back in the ice. He goes back in suspended animation.
Right.
Which is kind of like, it's interesting. I feel like it's kind of a tease where it's like, hey, Winter Soldier's back in the fray, and now he's gone again.
And now he's gone.
Yeah. But they want to like basically entirely cure him of his brainwashing.
Right.
Because at this point, like it's like as happens in the movie, Zemo says a couple words, and suddenly he's back to crazy Hydra assassin.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think that was. Very much just the like serving up the plot point, the plot hook for Black Panther film.
Absolutely,
because he says if they ever find out about him here, they're come for him. They're like, okay, we know what's going to happen to Black Panther now, probably.
Possibly, I mean it definitely could set it up for Winter Soldier to be in the Black Panther movie, which would be kind of cool.
Ooh, yeah, that would be dope.
So that'd be interesting.
I also love that it gives us a little bit of a tease of what Wakanda is.
Because
they have the highest technology. They're able to put him, Winter Soldier, in, like, cryo, whatever they call it in this movie. I don't know. They freeze him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it goes out the window, and it's a jungle.
Yeah, that's it's this highly technically advanced African society, which I feel like you don't see that much of in movies or, like, in life, really. Like, it's mostly, like, a lot of time Africa is depicted as, like, this jungle area or, like, this rundown, primitive area.
Whatever. Yeah.
And so it's... I think really fantastic to see like this fictional country portrayed in like this like elegant, like interesting way.
Yeah.
They say they had like the best doctors in the world at Wakanda and like all that kind of stuff. Like,
right. In the new comics that just came out written by Ta-Nehisi Coates, I think is how you pronounce it.
Right.
That's how Wakanda is in number one. It's kind of this like, techno Egyptian like weird floaty pyramid kind of city, weird stuff, and it's badass. It's super cool.
Yep.
To put those two things, those two ideas of like primitive society and he's a fucking superhero in the Avengers. Like of course they have that kind of technology.
Yes.
Put them together and it's super exciting. And my favorite tease we get, I just thought of it with Black Panther when his female bodyguard like steps to Black Widow and is like move or be moved. That's like such an awesome tease I hope that is in the Black Panther movie, because in the comics Black Panther has like this elite squad of female bodyguards and they're like the most trained assassins, like the most badass people, at least in the number one they were. So I really hope they have more of that in with like alongside his team in the Black Panther film, which I'm sure they will, unless that was just like a throwaway joke for people that know. But it doesn't seem like it was.
Right.
So that'll be cool.
Yeah, that's definitely cool. And then the other post-credit scene is another tease for Spider-Man, which is a short scene where May is like tending to Peter's wounds, saying, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I got into a fight," and she's like, "Well, did you hit back?" And he's like, "Yeah, yeah, I hit back."
This guy's Steve from Brooklyn. You don't know him. That was my favorite. Yeah,
that was good. And then he's like messing around with like the thing on his watch, and it like lights up, and it's a Spidey signal, which is
a thing.
Oh yeah, Spidey signal's a thing.
Is it really?
Yeah, that's a really old school Spider-Man thing.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was a deep cut. So that was kind of cool. Like we've never seen the Spidey signal in a movie, I don't think.
No.
So it's kind of neat. I mean, it wasn't like anything substantial, but it's like a fun little scene.
Yeah, and because I didn't know the Spidey signal was a thing, I thought it was like because it had like rotating bits around the. I mean, it's on screen for like a half a second.
It definitely seemed like it was some Stark technology that Tony said.
Yeah, but I thought it was like one of the like a weird. You know, he's got that like Minority Report computers everywhere. so I thought it was one of those things. I mean, it's clearly Stark has furnished him with equipment, the suit, and all that stuff.
Yep.
So that's cool. That's another cool tease that, you know, Spider-Man will have Iron Man or will have Tony Stark in it.
Right.
In a standalone movie. And if fades to black and Spider-Man will return.
Yeah, which is nice.
Ugh, the hype engine.
Yeah, it is fully on board. And that movie's coming out next year, which is pretty nuts.
They've started filming already? They must have immediately gone into Spider-Man.
Probably, yeah. I know that movie's being directed by John Watts, who directed Cop Car, which is great.
Okay. Have to watch that.
Pretty psyched for that. And and Ryan Coogler's doing Black Panther, of course, which is fucking awesome.
Seeing just the way they set him up in this movie, I can't wait for Ryan Coogler to just like dominate.
Yeah, just totally run with it. That movie's gonna be that's very excited for that one. So I mean that's Captain America Civil War. I feel like we have talked about this for a while.
Good luck editing in this one.
The thing is usually I edit and there's like pauses and stuff that I have to take out and stuff, but I feel like we were just talking nonstop for most of this, so
it should be that's
pretty,
a good point.
Should be a pretty easy edit. But all right, so Mike, overall thoughts? You were a fan?
That's an understatement, so yes.
And I was also a fan, so definitely Captain America Civil War, and then I guess the next comic book would be coming out is X-Men Apocalypse, which I've heard pretty mixed things.
Yeah.
The reviews just came out, and I've heard some people really dig it, and others that are like, man, this is not good, so...
Yeah, I'm confused yet tentatively excited about what that will be. I don't know.
Yeah, we might.
I feel like they're not even trying with timelines anymore, which is fine, I guess.
Yeah, we might be reviewing that one when that comes out. But until then, where can we find you online this week, Mike?
Find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons and Dragons, my friends and I stream our games at twitch.tv/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog. You can follow our other Twitter account at filmbookpodcast, where you can follow all of our various podcasts and see what's going on. And you can find my other podcast at filmbook.com, my podcast about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Gotham. So thank you guys so much for listening to Filmbookcast. If you're listening to this review of our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast your email about, the title of your email, produce so many different ones to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us next week for a new episode of Complete Works, in which Mike and I will be discussing Nicolas Cage in the 1993 comedy Amos and Andrew, with Samuel L. Jackson, Nick Fury himself. And we're not still figuring it out. In 2 weeks, join us for the next film bookcast, where we'll be reviewing The Nice Guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for that.
Dude, I cannot wait. If The Nice Guys isn't my favorite movie of the year, I'm going to be very upset. Honestly.
Wow.
Honestly, like that's where I'm at with that movie. Like it just looks fantastic. Like it looks right up my alley. I'm really excited. Thank you guys so much for listening to our Captain America Civil War review. We are out.